Bengals Beat podcast, sponsored as always by 50 West Brewing Company. Owner Bobby Slattery, he's better known to you all as Optimistic Bobby for his rosy Bengals takes, but he truly has something special going on down on Route 50 in Newtown. They combine delicious beers, like my personal favorite, the best IPA anywhere, coast to coast, as well as always rotating seasonal selections. They combine that with an active lifestyle, running groups, sand volleyball leagues, cycling, canoeing, all that based out of the Pro Works. Go on down there, eat some fantastic food, drink some great local craft beer in what I honestly think is the best brewery environment our city has going. Anyway, if you get a chance, head on down to 50 West Brewing Company. Always a great time where every beer is a journey. Join for the ride. Welcome into the BBP. This is the Cincinnati Inquirer's Bengals Beat podcast, sponsored by 50 West Brewing Company. Every week, your Bengals beat writers, Paul Danner Jr. and Fletcher Page, take you inside Paul Brown Stadium. We're plugged into the club from the front office to the field. Win or lose, hiring or firing, we're always here to keep you in the loop. Let's go. All right, welcome in to the latest edition of the BBP. That's right, this is the Bengals Beat podcast presented by your great friends, makers of delicious beer and good times at 50 West Brewing Company. Paul Danner Jr., Fletcher Page are here with you from Cincinnati.com. Hey, big day. Wouldn't you agree?
I think so. It feels, today feels fresh.
Yeah, fresh and new. Like opening a new container of Old Spice. What flavor of Old Spice? What, you know how they have different, they all have different titles, you know? There's like classic, there's sport, there's like Wolf Thorn. They have all those. What flavor? What scent? Would Zach Taylor be of old, if we were trying to sum this up? Do you have one?
I don't really know all the scents. I was gonna make one up like Mountain Goat or something. But here's a few. Swagger is an actual.
I wouldn't give him Swagger. I don't think he's swaggy necessarily.
Like After him. Hours?
No.
No, you know what? He's pure sport.
Pure sport. Mm-hmm. I'll give you that. I could say pure sport. All about the ball. Hey, but so anyway, big episode obviously to get to. And I think we've already covered the most important point, haven't we? I didn't expect that to be where we go. I never know where we'll go. Okay, so Zach Taylor introduced officially as head coach of the Cincinnati Bengals and has his press conference, all the marketing, all of the junket to all the local media. God bless him for putting up with all of us for as long as he does, asking so many questions and him having to answer the same ones often over and over again. A lot to touch on. Plus, we still have extras from the Super Bowl that I have from down there from the end of last week. Some sort of goodies from that area. So a ton of stuff to get to. We're going to cover you. This is going to be, I don't know if I'll call it newsy, but we're going to just try and kind of run through everything that we have published up on the site right now and go tangentially off of that. I'm going to give you sort of a 15-minute insider interview with Zach that was just with the local beat writers. So nothing that you would find on any of the team website or anything like that. This is just a local beat writer convo with some interesting stuff on staffing, on Andy Dalton, on his journey, so to speak.
His inability to beat Oklahoma in college.
also being a big part of it. So a lot, you'll get that coming up here in a little bit. We're going to have news on where the staff stands, which if you're like, I don't have time to wait, I need to know. You can just go to Cincinnati.com right now. That story is up on everything we know about where the staff stands, including a little bit of breaking news in there. But we will get into that here at a later date. But I just want to kind of go a little bit through start off with some of our observations from, hey, it's finally official, worst kept secret in the history of Cincinnati, unveiled Zach Taylor, now head coach. What number one takeaway? I always call it the call your mom test, right? Like leaving the building, Your mom calls you. How was your day? Oh, what was your biggest takeaway from today with Zach?
Well, in that scenario, the first thing I would say is that we still don't know who the defensive coordinator is going to be.
Yeah.
And I think that one's been.
Would you really talk to your mom about that?
Like, oh, my mom loves a 3-4, 4-3. She likes multiple front defenses.
Multiple, yeah. She's multiple.
Likes aggressive.
My mom's a bear defense. She likes the old 4-6. Old Buddy Ryan, you know? Go ahead.
No, but I think that's been the, given the comparison to Sean McVay and what the Rams have been able to do the past 2 years, we're just waiting on the next Wade Phillips to be announced, and that we thought by this point maybe Jack Del Rio or John Fox, one of those guys, would already be on track to be in place, and that's still something that's not settled.
No, it's not, and you're right, and I guess we can go ahead and just jump into jump into the staff stuff right now. Because that is sort of the newsy element of where we're at with things is, yeah, we've known Zach Taylor for a while. Yeah, we know about culture and we know about all the stuff, and we learned plenty about that today, and that's all great and everything. But, you know, this blueprint is what it is for a reason. I mean, there's a reason it's the blueprint. It's the young offensive head coach who does the play calling, has no history on the defensive side of the ball at all, or as a coordinator. So, I mean, you definitely want somebody who can just take the defense and own it and really run with that chip. And so what we've had is, you know, Jack Del Rio was kind of the thought for a while, and it appears that Taylor and Del Rio talked and decided that it wasn't going to be a good fit for him here. Then, you know, we had – obviously Vance Joseph, who took the Arizona defensive coordinator job. I'm sure that there would have been thoughts about him being in play here at one point if he would have stayed. You know, Dennis Allen, who is the defensive coordinator for the New Orleans Saints. Reportedly the tires have been kicked on him, and it looks like he landed an extension out of the deal, so good for him, to stay in New Orleans. So now you have a name like Dom Capers that has been lifted, who was the defensive coordinator of the Green Bay Packers for almost a decade, I believe 8 years, and just let go this past year with their coaching change. And, you know, he's been a head coach twice. He's 68. You know, two different stints as head coach with the Panthers and the Texans.
Yeah, that's right.
And so, you know, last week – at the Super Bowl, Boomer Esiason said he's going to try to work on getting John Fox out of the TV booth where he's kind of been hanging out a little bit. That would be a guy who was previously a head coach and with a defensive coordinator background. And maybe he comes into play. After that, though, it's pretty wide open. And they're obviously trying to track this down, but it's kind of funny that he just landed here in Cincinnati. He just met everyone, and he might have arguably one of the biggest decisions of his first 2 years on his plate and on fire right now as for urgency.
Well, I'm going to probably spend the next 45 minutes to an hour giving you a lot of credit for some things that you've said.
Don't do this.
No, in the past.
I don't want this.
No, seriously. I remember when we were trying to predict who was going to be the head coach and maybe how these things would fall into place, you said the let's go moment. Yeah. For Bengals fans would be if they hired one of these up-and-coming offensive minds and he was able to bring in a guy like Jack Del Rio. And
right.
And a week ago, we thought that was going to be the case. That if that goes down, Jack Del Rio with Zach Taylor, I think that it would be really hard for a fan here in Cincinnati to be a downer.
Oh, they'd find a way.
I'm sure –
And then they'd blame me and call me Paul Downer Jr., and right. That's all fine. Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, that would be – that's an easy sell. But you know, look, I got no problem with Zach Taylor saying I don't think we're a fit, and that our whether it's a personality thing, whether it's a career advancement thing, it doesn't matter. If Zach Taylor doesn't think that Jack Del Rio, because Jack Del Rio's resume is a fit, right? We can admit that. I mean, any fool can look and say, oh, yeah, this dude fits exactly what you would want out of that position as far as where he's been, what he's done, what his name and his history means. So if you're telling me that Zach Taylor looked at that and said, whatever this is, is not going to work for me, I got no problem. Mm-hmm. I mean, you've given this guy the keys. You got to let him live his vision. And if his vision, if he feels like Jack Del Rio isn't that, then that's fine. You know, the other guys that you're going for, it's just, you know, you start going down the list too far and you really start jeopardizing things because this whole model is really based on a really badass DC.
Yeah. And also just a calming, stable, steady, been around the block voice.
Mm-hmm.
Not just badass. So, yeah, I mean, we're going a couple names down the list, and you're kind of going, I don't know about that.
But there's no
That's not to say it won't work.
But look, I mean, but let's just sit. I mean, I also have no problem if you just you get the Zach Taylor version of defense. If you right. know, look what happened in Indy with Matt Eberflus. I mean, that was a guy who was a linebacker's coach who came up. And, I mean, now Frank Reich was a little bit more, mm-hmm. had a little bit more, I don't know, gray in his beard, so to speak. Which Zach Taylor has no gray in his beard, notably. And that worked out fine. I mean, it's just a guy who can come in and have a great defense. The blueprint says you want experience, and obviously experience is important. But how important to me, you know, and what I think I respect about this is you're not going to let that be a deal breaker that I need that, I got to have that model. And the whole idea of you got to be willing to think outside of the box, which Zach mentioned many times, and you've got to be willing to not necessarily follow what everybody thinks you should follow and go with what you know to be true, it looks to be the case in this situation. And, you know, you hope that you can land whoever you want to land. But I got no problem with him saying, even if it's someone who comes in and is like, yeah, it's his first time ever being a DC. Mm-hmm. Let the kids play, whatever, man. You live right. live your best life.
And you already have a presence on staff in Darren Simmons
right.
that has familiarity with the roster and can kind of be a bridge there. I think a major resource for Zach in the next couple days to start building a relationship
I'll tell you
with players.
If a DC comes in and he's and he doesn't have much experience, he's not one of these standard. Mm-hmm. Man, so much more pressure falls on Darren. And I happen to think that that would be good for this organization. I think Darren Simmons is as underrated as anybody. And empowering him, so to speak, a little bit more is a good thing. I'm just saying you have that to fall back on. But they would really be relying heavily, I think, on him to keep the kids in line a little bit.
Mm-hmm. And elsewhere, I think Robert Livingston is a guy that kind of fits a lot of what you're talking about in terms of a young, upcoming defensive mind.
Indeed.
Much in the fashion of like a Zach Taylor on offense. Alex Van Pelt at quarterbacks he's a guy that any team would like to have in that role. But elsewhere, you've got a little bit of news in that story that you wrote about maybe some names as they're filling this thing out.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously we get on the offensive side of the other biggest question as far as staff goes is, well, what's going to happen at offensive line? We know Frank Pollock left and, you know, he went to the Jets. The Bill Callahan thing was mentioned and Callahan does not appear he's going to get out of that contract. Mm-hmm. He's in Washington for another year. Yeah, the possibility of him eventually coming here if he's working with his son, I think would be very, very real when that contract is up, which we believe that that's up after next year. So keep that in mind. But all sources say that it's going to be Jim Turner, who is a guy who it makes sense when you look at him, you know, just on with a resume on face. He's been with Zach almost every step of his career. He was at it with Texas A&M. With Miami, came with him to UC. And so there's a ton of familiarity there and understanding of what the system is and obviously comfort with that guy as a coach. If that's the direction it goes, that's the direction it goes. He's done the gig in this league before. And, you know, you get a guy that you're familiar with and you hope that works out.
Well, I think that really is one of the – that's Zach Taylor's first big decision because Frank Pollock did such a great job with what he had last year on the offensive line and what they were able to do with Joe Mixon. I know that Mixon – I've been told that Joe Mixon wasn't exactly enthused about losing
were
both.
Were you told by that by him on Twitter?
Well, yeah, he was not – he showed his displeasure on Twitter, but I think that was a pretty big moment, especially for him, leading the AFC in rushing, given what they had. What the amount of rushing yards and average per and everything we talked about over year was pretty good. So that's a pretty big decision for Zach Taylor to go in a different direction there. But you got to go with your guy. I get it.
If you run your system, if you're running the Kubiak Shanahan system with the zone blocking, if that's what you do, and this is what you're going to specialize in, you want a guy who teaches what you specialize in and knows your specialty. Mm-hmm. Does that mean that Frank Pollock couldn't do it? But I also respect him for saying, I'm not going to ask Frank Pollock to teach my stuff.
Right.
They came in, Bill Lazor and Frank Pollock came in and threw everything to the ceiling and started over and built their own thing from scratch last year. Okay, and it didn't work. And that's fine. Mm-hmm. It didn't work for the whole of the team.
Right.
Okay, I mean, that's why Zach Taylor's here, because it didn't work well enough, at least in the way it was utilized. So, if you're like, this is my scheme, this is what I'm going to use, I need someone I know knows how to teach my scheme, then go for it. Mm-hmm. Great offensive line coaches don't have to be great everywhere. If it needs to be the right fit for you, and if that's who it appears that's who he thinks is the right fit for him, so they'll go with that. Outside of that, I mean, James Casey comes in at tight ends. He was just a player not too long ago. He was with the University of Houston. But the defensive staff, so, you know, we know Durante Jones, we know Robert Livingston, the line and linebacker will get filled out. That's out there. They got to get the coordinator settled first. Running backs looks open still. And then you have Alex Van Pelt, you have Bob Bicknell still around. So you're going to have a lot still in place. Dan Pitcher, who is a assistant quarterbacks coach, he'll be back still. You've got a lot of people here to make Andy Dalton comfortable.
Are we going to transition?
Let's go there. Let's go there. I mean, I think that covered the staff. Okay. I mean, do you have another staff note?
No, I don't. But I get, once again, I've got to give you credit.
Stop.
Because the things that you've said.
Why is it got to be like this?
Have been confirmed today.
Is there some sort? Am I like on a committee to give you a raise or something? Why is this happening?
I can assure you that I'm receiving no financial kickbacks for this, for my recommendations. But I mean, I was at the Senior Bowl and Duke Tobin did give a nice nod to Andy. Duke had said that they think Andy's got a number of years left and that they feel like that they can win with him. Zach Taylor basically echoed the same thing, and that he can do a lot of the same things they were doing in Los Angeles with Jared Goff, and it looks like he's comfortable moving forward with Andy, and we'll see how that position progresses through the draft and whatnot, but it looks like Andy's going to be the quarterback for some time.
Where do you get to the part where you tell me how great I am?
Well, I mean, it says what you've been saying. I mean, obviously, look, Andy's contract was such that this was going to be the way it was, no matter what, at least for another year or two, but Zach seems comfortable with Andy's ability to be sort of a quarterback that can do a lot of things like they did with Goff this year. So,
I finally wrote what I've been yelling on the BBP for like months on Sunday, mm-hmm. and that is the idea that can the Bengals be the Rams? And when you look at some of the parallels, it makes sense. I got into a little bit of the scheme stuff that we just were talking about here, and it. Look, it really does fit Andy Dalton, and I know people and I are going to hate me, because by the end, here's what's going to turn into. This is what's going to turn into, Fletcher. This is going to be the Randy Bullock experience all over again, where everyone held me personally responsible for every Randy Bullock miss because I was in the past pointing out that he had made a number of kicks and just pointing out the reasons why they would keep him. And so everyone's going to hold me personally responsible for every Andy Dalton incompletion. I'm just telling you, he is so similar to when you're talking about, as far as the level goes, of Matt Ryan, of Jared Goff, of guys that have gone to the Super Bowl in this system. And you know, his timing of getting the ball out, his accuracy, when you really look at the PFF QB annual, I always will shout out PFF. The work they do with quarterbacks is unmatched for anything of public consumption. He is in the top quadrant right next to Goff and Ryan in almost every single main category, even if you're just looking at last year with all the crap they had going on around him with no AJ for a few games, Bobby Hart and Alex Redmond and all that, everything else. And there he is. Highest percentage of big-time throws. Lowest percentage of turnover-worthy throws. Highest percentage of positively graded plays. You know, you get into accuracy, actual on-frame accuracy. He was second in the NFL between 10 and 20 yards. I mean, you get into all of this stuff. Quick decision, quickest to throw. He's always been one of the quickest to throw in the NFL. This is a it's an intelligent man's offense, and you need an intelligent quarterback to run it. That is one of the keys to Andy Dalton's game, has been one of the absolute strengths for him.
And, yeah.
This fits him. I mean, what the Rams have done fits Andy Dalton. And, people can, you know, if he goes and flutters out, then he flutters out. And I will stand here and say, man, did I whiff on that? I really thought he would do well in this. I look at this and I look at Zach Taylor's history with quarterbacks making them better. Brian Callahan's history with quarterbacks making them better. Alex Van Pelt is back. Dan Pitcher is a heck of a coach too. There are just so many people dedicated to making Andy Dalton his best, and he's got the talent around to do it. If this system seems to fit him, all of that stuff adds up, man. Like, it just adds up to they can win with this guy. Does that mean? Because let me remind everyone of something. Kansas City, Alex Smith was about to win the MVP. People forget this because of Patrick Mahomes now. He was about to win the MVP and had Kansas City on the precipice. Did they make it? No. They still drafted Patrick Mahomes, even they knew Alex Smith could do this. And Alex Smith still went out and damn near won the MVP. And trading him was still smart. And having Patrick Mahomes as Pat, that doesn't stop the Bengals from doing any of the Patrick Mahomes stuff.
Right. All of that's on the table.
Yes. This is not my point. My point is, Andy Dalton can take you to a Super Bowl with the way this is all set up. I said it. That's right. I said it. I'll say it down there. I said it. He can take you to a Super Bowl. And I don't care. With this setup, in a total, if things go the way as you hope they do, Andy Dalton is no different than Matt Ryan and Jared Goff leading a team to the Super Bowl. Period.
Yeah, Nick Foles, yeah.
And Nick Foles, thank you.
And to your point, I mean, Randy Bullock was 18 of 20 and 19. And 19 of 23, and you still only hear about those two misses or the three misses or whatever it is.
I know.
That's when they hit you on the Twitter and say, I knew it.
I know. The Bullock hatred on Twitter is always large. So anyway,
we don't have to. I'm really sad you're not going to be able to scream out in vain about Hugh here in the building. He's gone for good here, I believe.
He is. I wanted to yell to him.
Yeah.
Hugh, you think Andy can win a Super Bowl?
Just silence now.
Just silence. Yeah, nothing's coming back. He don't know. I have to yell much louder.
Well, okay. Well, transition to what I really think is the biggest takeaway of the day, wholesale, is it was time for a change. And another thing that you've been saying.
Stop.
You've been telling us this.
Why has it got to be like this?
Mike Brown indicated that the family was in on this process and decision to move from Marvin to a new coach. It included four or five people, only one of which is not in the family, Duke Tobin, who is the general manager of this franchise.
Yes.
And he's the one, Mike Brown confirmed, that was out in front leading this, setting up the interviews, and essentially making the decision. And the family was on board with his decision.
This was Duke Tobin's ship. And so to reiterate, of course, I know, because BBP listeners, man, they smart. They know, because they got the inside. They've been back around since this was scribe session. They know that what Duke Tobin's role is. This is the preaching to the choir here, me and you, into these microphones. They know that Duke Tobin is the GM and he's running the show. This was just further validation of what we've been saying. The fact that Mike Brown saying Duke led this search is something. And it just further confirms everything that we've been saying here. And it adds that extra level. Because there still was a little bit of extra of how far in front will Duke be on? Okay, he's in the committee, but is he one of five? No, not only is he not just one of five, he's one, right? I mean, to me, that was further validation, but
it's not a surprise because of the way he has been in the organization for a long time now. Other thing that Mike Brown said, and that was
it's something that I got to give you credit for because
this was probably for me the most validating, only because we have not heard him actually say this before. Mm-hmm. But I've been saying this for a long time, and that is empty seats matter to Mike Brown, and fans were having an effect last year. And all I wanted to know, I wasn't even trying to elicit this from Mike, was very simple, and that was Marvin sat right here and said it was time. Why for you was it time to make this move away from Marvin and into this next generation, so to speak, for the Bengals? And he talked a little bit about, hey, I don't want to say anything disparaging about Marvin, which I didn't ask him to, but I was just and pointing out that there was a disconnect. He felt a disconnect with the fan base being a big part of this. Mm-hmm. And it was. And when he sits there, people think he's just this disconnected owner who is, you know, counting his money up. It just couldn't be further from the truth. Watching the fans turn on him and his team absolutely breaks his heart. He cares about nothing more than this team winning and bringing joy to the city and trying to reward the fans. And I know people, he is so misunderstood that way. And that's fine. People can have their problems with him, and we have taken him to task, and we can debate till we're dead. Mm-hmm. About Mike Brown and his role in a lot of things in the city. But, man, it really matters that this team can connect with the fans. And he's always just wanted to find ways to win for them. And when the fans had completely turned on him this year, I think it was the deal breaker. I think it was the deal breaker. And he basically said that today.
You said that in, like, November. So I have to give you credit.
I don't know why this has turned out
this
way.
It's kind of getting weird.
It's getting weird. It's like weird. It does. It feels awkward.
Well, the point being, it does get a little bit old whenever you hear for sports, like for, you know, Major League Baseball or NASCAR, or you hear this, the attendance is down, and usually the response will be, well, they're making so much money from the television contracts, like they don't even care. Who cares? And you hear that from team to team. Mm-hmm. And so you're right. I mean, whenever an owner looks out and sees that many empty seats, and I would imagine feels that many empty suites, that is a perfect indicator that you've lost your fan base. There's a disconnect here between the on-field product and the city and the people. And it's not just about some – you know, a television contract that's guaranteeing you money. This is an indicator of major problems.
And without diving down to this very deep wormhole, I mean, Mike views this team financially to also be very dependent on the fans and mm-hmm. the fan base. You know, he will talk to you until the end of the day about, you know, economic inequities and small markets and all this stuff and,
right.
and all that. But he is one that really matters as well for financial stability. He views that as important in that way too. So all that sort of blends together. But I thought that was an important takeaway. Let's give a quick break here and a chance to bring in Zach Taylor, the 15 minutes that he did with Reiners, and then we'll come back and kind of react to a little bit more of things that he had to say. A reminder, you know what this is a great opportunity to? You're about to have 15 minutes. You know what you should do? Crack a coast to coast.
That's right.
You crack a coast to coast, or you got to punch you in the IPA, which is going out year-round, and you can open one of those and drink it in 15 minutes, and you'll feel you'll got all this positive motivation from and fresh from a new coach and a delicious beer. You'll feel so much better by the end of this. You'll just be totally relaxed. It's gonna make your day.
Nothing alleviates my concern about a defensive coordinator position like a smooth beer.
Like a smooth punch you in the IPA. That's what you need. Until they hire one, I do think they're going to go with the high alcohol content punch you in the IPA, though. The coast to coast, the American lager, I'll get to those when I'm celebrating an actual coordinator being mentioned. Until then, a little uptight, need a little higher ABV. All right, so anyway, here's Zach Taylor in a small scrum with the local beat writers.
You kind of touched on this in the press conference, but coming from an offensive background, when you're looking at defensive coordinator candidates, do you go into it thinking, all right, this is what I want to run, or is it kind of more of an open-minded search based on what they bring?
Yeah, it's about the right fit for these players and the culture we want to establish. And so, like I said, I don't want to get too specific with what we're looking for, but we're going to find the right person, and we're going to talk to as many people as we need to, but it's going to be right for fit for this building and for the players we have around here.
Well, I guess we can assume it's going to be a 4-3, I guess.
Yeah, I don't want to make any assumptions on anything, but we'll find the right fit for these players.
Well, you know the blueprint, right? I mean, you're supposed to, you're the young head coach. You're supposed to have the grizzled old former head coach, defensive coordinator.
That's right.
Is an experienced head of that side of the ball important because you are a younger guy? Is that a big deal for you, or is that not really?
I think we'll look at people with all sorts of levels of experience. And, I do think you do want experience in the staff, and there's great value there. But as long as people are sound teachers and confident in what they're doing and get the players to play to their best abilities, then we're going to be in great shape with whoever we hire.
How important in that same respect, I know the Rams talk a lot about the role that Witt played there as a veteran leader to really help sell everyone on a young coach. I mean, is that something that you look for in this locker room, or maybe you need to go find that as somebody that can be a real veteran leader presence to help you sell your mission a little bit?
Sure, and that's what I look forward to. Finally buckling down and evaluating the talent and the players in this roster and getting to know them, because then you get the chance to figure out who your leaders are and what pieces of the puzzle you need to complete this whole thing. So that's the process that we'll start today and going forward and try to make sure that we have that leadership in the building, which I think we do, and find the pieces that fit around that.
How much did you talk to Witt about this organization, about the way things run here?
You know what, we were obviously had a common goal to go win the Super Bowl together, and that was our focus, but my conversations with Witt, what was clearly communicated to me was his love for this organization, for the city, and how much he valued his time here and the appreciation he had for the Brown family. Those were things that were made crystal clear to me from my interactions with Witt. And so just having those conversations let me know that this was the place for me and I'd fit in nicely.
When you run into some resistance, say, worst case scenario, player just starts butting your heads with you about culture, whatever.
Yep.
Is your thought process to try to convert them or say, you go find someplace?
I think each situation is different. But number one, as a young coach, you got to build a relationship with all these players, because if you don't build that trust and that relationship, then it's going to be hard for me to hold them to a high standard and handle situations like that. So my first mission is to build a relationship with all the players on offense and defense. And once we establish that trust, then you can handle those situations accordingly and deal with them as they come.
Jared Goff did different things in your offense maybe than Andy does here, but what similarities do you find between those two?
I've seen Andy do all the things that we're going to ask him to do here. You know, he's been great under center, great in play action, great on the perimeter and the nakeds, and he's been an accurate passer when he's asked to drop back. So I know he's smart. Like I said, I've followed his whole career since his time back at TCU. So he's a great fit for what we're going to do. He and Jared are very similar personality-wise. They're very smart. The players flock to them, and so excited to get to work with him.
You see a lot of similarities between Mixon and Gurley, too, in terms of physically what they can give you?
Yeah, Mixon is a dynamic player, and so I'm very excited to work with him, and he can bring a lot to the table here. There's a lot of different things you can do with those backs that we have, and so excited to get our hands on them and really work with them in the system.
When the Bengals were looking at you, they reached out to people who know you to get a read on you. Did you have time to reach out to people in other organizations to get a read on the Bengals?
No, you hear enough about every organization as you coach in this league, just talking to people who have coached here and people who have played here, there's a love and there's a loyalty to this organization. And like I said, I fell in love with the city, me and my wife did. And so I just knew that just being around the Brown family for the 4 hours I was in that initial interview, I knew that I had no questions on my end. It was a great fit. They're good people, and they just want to win, and they want to find someone that can do that. And so I'm fortunate that they selected me to be the 10th head coach here.
They liked you, obviously, during that interview process. Is there one thing that they said to you that you're like, that sounds pretty – I mean, was there anything on their end back to you that gave that connection even more?
You know, not really. It's just when the conversation flows, and it didn't feel like we were going from one question to the next. It just felt easy to talk and cover a lot of different topics, and it was never difficult. And so that was the connection that I felt. It is hard to tell what they're feeling on the other end, but I was hopeful that they felt the same way I did, and I think it was proven that they did.
We've heard a lot about the Sean McVay effect. When you hear that, what does that mean to you when you hear the Sean McVay effect?
Yeah, he affects everyone he's around, you know, and I think it's more than just scheme. You know, he is brilliant, and he's great scheme and great mismatches, but it's more that he gets the most out of the people, the players and the coaches that are around him every day. And I've always felt that's important. Sean just is another example of doing it the right way, and good things will happen, and you know, we'll follow his lead to an extent.
Is that the biggest thing, even scheme, or that's, is that the biggest thing you learned from him, was handling people?
Yeah, I really do. You know, it's everyone felt valued. Everyone, no idea was dumb or too great to be a part of the plan, and so I think everybody felt like their role was important. And it's easy to come to work every single day when you know there's value with what you're doing and you feel appreciated. And so we'll establish that same culture here.
Did the Rams put assistants on a podium like that at all for press conferences?
The coordinators.
Just
the
coordinators?
Yeah, just the coordinators.
Was that the biggest one? I mean, I guess Nebraska, you probably had a few.
Yeah.
Right?
Sure. My time at Miami, you know, I did a couple there. So Nebraska is a special place. It's different. You know, I remember they tried to warn me my first – spring practice that there's going to be a lot of media, and I thought that's not a big deal. I was kind of expecting this, and it was shocking to walk into the room and see hundreds of people in there. So that was my first, well, here you go moment, and back in 2005. And so, you know, it's all part of the gig.
How much coaching did Sarah give you for today?
My wife?
Yeah.
You know, she's probably more nervous than I am about this whole process. Yeah. You know, she's excited. She's happy. She's been a big part of this along the way, and couldn't have done it without her.
Is there a thing that Sean may have said to you, like, if you don't do one thing, make sure you do as a head coach?
Sean, I wouldn't say there's one thing he said. I think there's a lot of things he said. And it's not like you sit down and just have a conversation, because he's open with you every single day I was on the job there. So it's not like most places where you got to go in the head coach's office and have a significant conversation. Every single day I had a significant conversation with Sean. And, so again, that's what made this process so easy, because everything I talked about, I lived and believed in, and was confident that it worked, and it's proven that it worked. And so that's an easy thing to come into a building and talk about.
Did you grow up wanting to play at Oklahoma, or what was?
Yeah, I would be lying if I said I didn't. My dad was a captain there, you know, for Coach Switzer, and I grew up riding my bike to about every home game ever. And so I grew up an Oklahoma fan, but when I went through the recruitment process, as a quarterback, I was about 110 pounds, I think. You know, it felt like my senior year, not quite that, but I knew that that wasn't going to be an option. They had just won the national championship. I knew that that ship had sailed, so I started looking at places that would benefit from me.
And then you end up playing against them.
You know, I ended up playing against them. Yeah, thanks for bringing that up. I was only two against the Sooners, but
I mean, you had to. That was a hell of a climb for you. You went to junior college. You transferred. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's.
I went to Wake Forest for two seasons, and I remember when I left, I went back to Norman and was driving around town and saw the Boomer Sooner bumper stickers and all this stuff, and I just thought, man, I just want to be somewhere where people love football and appreciate football, and I did not imagine I was going to go to the holy grail of football locations, you know, because those people are diehard. It was a great experience, but it was surreal, you know, when I finally signed the papers and took the scholarship in Nebraska. It was a proud moment for me and my family.
I mean, there's a lesson there to hang with it, I guess.
Hang with it, you know, and really the year I went to junior college, and I mentioned Troy Morrill and Aaron Flores, and, you know, I was a kid that was a bounce back from a Division I. I wasn't really good enough to play at Wake Forest at the time. I went to junior college, physically matured, and the coaches gave me the confidence I needed to get me over the hump. You know, they believed in me, you know, and I felt that every single day, and so it helped me play at a higher level, and then gave me the opportunity to go to Nebraska, and I was on my way there.
The Bengals were real impressed how buttoned up you were during the interview process. Was Sean a mentor in that regard, saying, hey, look, I'm 32, and I'm a head coach. Get your stuff together and start thinking about your staff. Did he actually talk to you guys about that?
No, he really didn't, but he was an unbelievable resource as the process unfolded.
Right.
You know, any question I had, he was always quick to give me. He was an open book, everything he went through.
Right.
So, no, he wasn't pushing me along to – he knew I wanted to be a head coach,
right,
and he wanted me to be a head coach. And when the interview request came in, he did sit down and say, here's what I went through.
Right.
Here's experiences that may help you. But at the same time, you just have to be true to yourself. If I try to be Sean McVay, I'm going to fail, to be quite honest with you. That's we're different people. And so I've learned a lot from him, but I'm going to be Zach Taylor and do the best I can my way. And not my way, it's the Cincinnati Bengals way, right? Everyone's on the same page, and we're going to get the most out of everybody here.
How would you say?
Go ahead.
How would you say you're different from Sean?
Sean is a very dynamic personality. You know, he walks in front of a room and he energizes that room, and that's Sean's personality. I'm a little more reserved. That's just the way that I am, and so I'm not going to try to be Sean. Sean is spectacular in his own way, and I'm going to do it the way that I feel most comfortable with, and has got me this point.
With the rules being what they are, did you just have that 1 4-hour interview, or were you able to talk to them?
I was able to visit with them again.
Okay. Yeah. I couldn't remember exactly like when y'all are allowed to talk to people.
Yeah, it was just the one and then a second one.
Such an odd kind of rules process.
It's not easy.
A lot of waiting.
It's not easy. I don't have a better solution, though. You know, it is what it is. And I'm just fortunate that they waited on me, because I know a lot of places don't. You know, they feel like they got to get somebody who's available right now because they feel like they're going to be behind. But as I've talked about assembling a staff, we're going to get the right people. And I'm fortunate that they waited, feeling like I was the right person. They waited for me. And now we're going to build the staff the right way and make sure that this thing's built for the long term and not worry about losing a week or two. You know, that's not important in the long run. So we'll get the right people in place.
So 13 days before the Super Bowl, you're flying here for a second interview. Are you going over football? Ram stuff, Super Bowl stuff, or are you prepping for the interview?
You know, that was the one day that I was able to just focus on this. And, you know, it was hard because, as you know, you're going to be a head coach of a place and you want to focus on that, but you just can't. It's just not the right way to do things. And so, but when you're able to take just that 24-hour period, knowing there's a game 2 weeks away, you can really just spend that 24 hours focused on the Bengals, and then we got a lot of work accomplished, got it done, get on the plane, shut my brain off from the Bengals and focus on the Patriots, and that's what I was able to do.
At what point in the process did you introduce your idea of what your staff could look like?
Because it's early,
immediately, yeah, like this is how I view it.
That's a big part of it. You know, and it wasn't as much the people, it was the vision I think that we have for each role. Yeah. And because you're not always going to, the people may change over the course of the process, and it's important, I think, to establish your vision for every position, what you're looking for, how they're going to influence the team, and then you find the right people that fit that vision for what you imagine each role will be.
Do you have an idea of, like, the Rams have, you know, passing game, running game coordinator, and things like that? Is that something that you prefer to the standard position coaches, I guess?
No, I think to start it'll be pretty traditional in that sense. That's some stuff sometimes that evolves over time. Mm-hmm. But I think everyone will clearly know what their responsibility is and what their title will be when they get here.
Do you plan on calling plays?
I do, yes.
I'll make a list of, like, okay, my defensive line coach list, my defensive coordinator list, I'll make a list of, like, you know, A, B, C, D. How far down do you have a list?
Yeah, it's, you know, as you coach, you always have in mind the people that are critical if you ever get an opportunity. And so you research over the years, you kind of always have a list of people. In your mind, it's not always on paper necessarily, right, but you always have an idea. Then when this process unfolds, you quickly do put, you know, 5 or 6 names in every position. You know, to start with, and never in a particular order. Like I said, you're painting a picture for what you want, and then as this process is unfolded and I know I was going to get this job, I start honing in on, okay, this person is a good complement to this other person that we're going to bring in, and that's the way that we've really approached things.
So you're looking for cohesion. I mean, cohesion is the big deal.
No doubt. I mean, this I'm going to say culture 1,000 times. You're going to hear it because that's what's most important, and there's great schemes everywhere. We can steal plays from everybody. We got our own plays. That's the way this league works, but what's important is the details and the techniques and the way that it's taught and the way it's communicated, and we'll make sure that we're the best in the world for that.
What was the biggest thing you wanted out of the coaches that would stay here through the transition, or that you were looking for out of people on the staff, and how did that work in figuring that out?
Well, I think you know, as you go through that process and you evaluate the coaches that are on staff, it's people I would have hired elsewhere, you know. So I think when you see the people that are definitely going to be here, they're all good people. They're all good coaches. Some I've known, some I didn't, but people I trust have always spoke highly of these people, and I always get a chance to talk to them first and feel good about the people we'll have on the staff.
It seems kind of traditional too, offensive head coach calling the plays, right? I mean, that just seems to be a natural.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's probably the reasons why they put me here is because of the system that we'll bring to the table, and it's something I believe in and know how to utilize. So I'm excited to get that process started.
Did you have any specific philosophies as to how you want to build your team, like, players-wise, like, through free agency, through the draft, or does that kind of come along with talking to front office and kind of figuring out together.
I think it's important to always build through the draft. You know, that's important, and then complement your team through free agency. And but number one for me, like I said, this process is really just getting started yesterday, is to evaluate what we have in the building and make sure that we then build the team the right way off of that. So I look forward to getting that thing started.
All right, so there there was Zach Taylor. Do we care about culture talk?
Whenever the team is not good, we do.
Because then the culture's
Well, I mean, I love hearing about, like, Whitworth, what he did to that Rams locker room. Mm-hmm. That's culture, so yeah, we care.
Well, I think it's important. I think him selling his vision and making the players believe in him quickly is a big deal. I talked with Whit and heard him talk quite a bit about, because everyone wanted to, you know, what is one thing you would always want to ask Andrew Whitworth about being older than your coach and having a lead? And he talked a lot saying, you know, and he's a very honest guy too, you know, brutally, morbidly, as we found out on Sunday night a little bit. And he just said, you know, I never once thought about this guy's younger than me because of the way he is, because of the way he carries himself. Like, I don't give a damn. This dude's a leader, and he's leading everybody, and it's great. And so you don't even think about that if you're on board, you know? I mean, to me, that's what's important when we're talking about Zach Taylor and culture is – if he can sell this culture and he can get people on board quickly, I don't think anybody's going to care that he's 35 or hasn't been a coordinator. You know, having some experience doing that, you would like for him to have. He doesn't, but that's fine. If he can sell it and if he can get people to believe in the culture of communication and all that stuff, then, you know, I think people will follow him. But It's an interesting thing to talk about because every coach wants to establish a culture and set a standard. Every single one. If we went back through all 8 press conferences of every single head coach hired and find, did any of them not mention setting a standard or a culture?
We should have.
Yeah.
We should have made an introduction presser bingo card. Culture and standard would probably be on there.
And I, you know what, but I will say this, and I said this a little bit last week. I do the one thing that I can't guarantee that Zach Taylor is going to be any good. I can't guarantee that Zach Taylor is going to be bad. I just know he's very different. Doc wrote that today. I don't. Zach Taylor is the only thing I know is I'm just he's not Marvin Lewis, and that's really the good thing here. And it's a very different way to try to connect with these players. We were talking with, you know, his friend, his sister, his wife, and, you know, his parents are here and everything. And it's just – it's a bunch of young – it's a bunch of young 30-somethings, you know, that are accomplished. They have different ways. He watches press conferences and listens to podcasts. What up?
How's it going, Zach?
How's it going, Zach? How you enjoying your first edition of the BBP? But, you know, that to me – it's a new generation. That's some Marvin Lewis, one, is not watching other press conferences. He's not listening to podcasts. He's not, and not that that is going to, like, all of a sudden now you can win games, but we're talking about connecting with just a different brand of player and having someone who this is who they are. He talked about Brad Stevens being a coach that he always liked and followed. People probably thought Brad Stevens was in over his head going to Boston, right?
Of course.
From Butler? and now he's one of the hot shot coaches in the entire NBA. Understanding how to connect with a new generation is more important now than ever. It's just kids are very different, and they require very different things now from their coaches than they did 20 years ago when a lot of the coaches and staffs, these guys who are in their 60s or whatever, not named Belichick, don't necessarily get as much. And that's just fact.
Yeah, a phrase that Taylor said a few times was clear communication. What am I looking for in coaches? Coaches that can communicate directly. And that, of course, is a break from Marvin, I do believe.
Yeah. And if you want to know how big of a break, go ahead and check out the broadcast of the AAF game that Marvin ends up as color commentary on. That I actually might watch that just to like write a do like a TV, like review it like a TV show.
I've already got anxiety thinking about that.
Marvin going through lists of players he's never heard of and like having to make up stuff on the spot or work the telestrator, right? Like he was working with the button on the sideline with Hardy Nickerson in was that in Baltimore?
Yeah.
Was that a Kareem? Yeah, my favorite Kareem photo of the season.
It is the photo of the season.
Of Marvin trying to figure out how the buttons worked as if they didn't have all week to figure it out. Do you have access to the materials? I mean, think about it. Anyway, so that's the type of stuff we're talking about.
Right.
Walkie-talkies. I mean, do you think PowerPoint fonts? Remember the PowerPoint font?
It was too small. They couldn't read it.
You didn't know how to work a PowerPoint font? You think that's going to be an issue with these 30-something whatevers?
No. Might be with that potential offensive line coach.
I mean, I have had font issues in the past, but I learned to work through them by the time I was in my late 20s. Look, don't try to use a cute. Everybody know. Look, Times New Roman is a solid font that people accept and know, and it's only trumped by Arial. I'm an Arial guy, personally.
Just don't use Comic Sans.
Exactly. That is probably what happened. I bet you Marvin Lewis uses Comic Sans. There's no doubt. Now that I think about
it. That would have made a great sign in Paul Brown Stadium at the end of last year.
Instead of the pizza one, it should have been Marv uses Comic Sans. It's always four words. It would have worked.
That's perfect.
Maybe, hey, if you're listening, I want that. Maybe we can do that for opening day next year. Not welcome, Zach. Marv uses Comic Sans.
Comic Sans.
All right. That's enough font talk. So we've gotten into culture and all that. There's just some other Super Bowl stuff, just things that I heard a lot during Super Bowl week about both Zach and other things going on. So the initial thing, because some dumb idiot somewhere decides that he's going to tweet out that Ryan Tannehill is coming to the Bengals and we're all supposed to like think that that's true. That's not happening. And if it was, it would be in some super cheap backup type of role. And Ryan Tannehill stinks, okay? I want to just make sure that's on the record and the people know that Ryan Tannehill is a poor, poor man's version of Andy Dalton. So until he gets cut, he's currently on a worse contract. So
right.
If you wanted him to come in here and serve as Andy Dalton's backup, okay, I'll listen to that. I don't think that's the way they should go. I think they should be looking for the next Patrick Mahomes or whatever, or some kid that they draft to be the backup to Andy Dalton personally. But you are getting somebody who is nowhere near as good as Andy Dalton. And people that think that Ryan Tannehill is better than Andy Dalton have not been watching, have never seen Ryan Tannehill and didn't watch the games against Miami. So just because a guy knows Ryan Tannehill or worked with him does not mean that he's suddenly going to bring him in here and want him to displace the current quarterback who he has stood behind. That is the last. Bringing somebody in here should be bringing in a young kid who can be on a rookie contract potentially and be great. That's it. Otherwise, you're just finding whoever you want your backup to be.
I agree. I don't want to waste anybody's time, any more time that's already been wasted.
But I saw a lot of that.
No, I know a lot of that circulating. Right.
Oh, Ryan, we getting Ryan Tannehill? No, you don't want him.
Right. I mean, we've already been over this a million times about Andy's situation, the contract, what they think of him.
Mm-hmm.
We understand what this quarterback situation is. So the outside world, once again, it's always amusing what kind of reports you're going to get. From the outside world.
So this is one that was asked to me on Twitter. I posted the top three people, I think, that should be most excited by Zach Taylor's hiring. I had Dalton 1, Ross 2, Mixon 3. What would your order be?
I think Andy, obviously, the quarterback in this situation, getting an offensive mind And of course, I think we've always wondered what might Andy or AJ be together without Marvin, you know, hanging over all of it.
Yeah.
I think John Ross, though, is the obvious guy. He scored so many touchdowns in the red zone last year, but I want to see what can be done with him 20-20.
Yeah.
I want a game plan for John Ross.
Yeah.
So I'll put John Ross on there twice, and then Andy Dalton at the top.
John Ross on there. So you're putting Andy 1, not Ross 1.
I put Andy 1, Ross 2.
Andy 1 probably just because he's more important.
He's a quarterback, yeah.
Yeah, but I think as far as someone that – I think growth potential, biggest growth potential because Zach Taylor arrives, Ross 1.
Mm-hmm. No doubt.
And, you know, that, in my opinion. Least bottom three. People, the bottom three who should be least excited about Zach Taylor's arrival. I mean, I'd assume they would all be on defense and, like, you know, Bobby Hart or something.
Yeah, I was going to say the right side of the line.
Yeah. Marv guys.
Anybody, you know, that played linebacker.
Yeah. Well, but those, no matter who showed up here, unless it was literally – you know, what was it? Martin Lewis. Yeah.
Martin Lewis.
Right. The with the glasses and the, which I was making the joke. I mean, how far down the line in this defensive coordinator search do they get?
Do they bring in Marvin Lewis?
Until they're just like, you know, we ended up saying we just feel like it should be Marv.
Come on down out of the woods, Marv.
He's probably still there, isn't he? No, I actually, they'll pick him up at the AAF game. They'd be like, get off the air and come back and coach our defense, damn it. bottom three, yeah. Well, for me,
question.
It should there. To me, there is no way that any coach would come in here talking about culture and communication and keep Vontaze Burfict around.
Right.
I've said it for a long time. I would say, thank you, Mike, for introducing me. My name is Zach Taylor. I have cut Vontaze Burfict. Nice to meet everyone. That's how I would start. So that's how you establish culture and accountability and a standard, because that's what you sat here and preaching. Because, hey, you can talk to me about a standard and accountability all you want. Prove it with actions, right? I would prove it with action in my first words. My name is Zach Taylor, and I just cut Vontaze Burfict. And so, to me, he's always number one, but I imagine most coaches would come in and probably right. want to get rid of him. That's not news. And if they don't, it will be a bigger mistake than getting rid of Andrew Whitworth. So I would start there. I would agree. You could probably just list all the linebackers. Because,
well, again, it comes down to just there are so many obvious weaknesses on this team that we're going to have to be addressed no matter who the guy was. Mm-hmm. I think obviously right tackle, right guard. We'll see what happens there at those spots.
Especially right tackle.
Because. Yeah. Because you can find
guards. Situation. Christian Westerman can play there. I mean, whatever. I think that I'm more in right tackle was such a big problem. You know, when you talk about needing smart players, I shouldn't say it like that. I mean, needing players that aren't making so many mental errors. I mean, the amount of mental errors that happened with Bobby Hart this year.
It's incredible.
We're insane. And you know, there's just a – you know, when Zach Taylor sits here and he's like, I need guys that come out there and really know how to run this and be intelligent, smart football players out there. I'm not saying Bobby Hart isn't smart. I'm saying he made a ton of mental mistakes out there on the field. And those kill you. So I would say Vontaze Burfict – and then just insert linebacker here, too. Yeah. And then I would say Bobby Hart, 3.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Yeah. All right. So, I mean, really, there some other stuff from Super Bowl week.
What did you think about your stay in Atlanta? I know you were there for a long time. I was in the state of Georgia for the first, 20 years of my life. What was your week like?
You know what's funny, and true BBP hardcore listeners will go back to when we had the walkout mm-hmm. in Atlanta and soon after saw a man with no shirt and getting kicked out of the Waffle House. Standard Waffle House stuff. But I had to walk past that Waffle House every day, a couple times a day. And every single time, I kept thinking about how disastrously this season spiraled from that point on and how different things were in late September at 3-1 and the offense humming and everything that was going on down there and getting the win. And then that guy took his shirt off in the Waffle House and got booted out, and it was hysterical. And you're like, It was just such a different time. And here we are three, four months later, and everything has been gutted. It's just, it's really remarkable how fast the NFL spins, man. Mm-hmm. It spins so fast. And when stuff goes sideways, it's amazing the fallout.
Yeah, and the Rams were 4-12 just 2 years ago.
A couple years, 7-9. Like, they're a series of 7-9ers, and they moved from St. Louis. I mean, that's always crazy. I did get to go back when I was writing that story and try to find old stories of jokes made about the Rams just 2 years ago. The Eric Dickerson tweet of where's the naked pictures. That's the stuff that we saw about. Literally, I've heard that joke a million times made about Marvin Lewis.
Right.
And it was, and then when they had the casting call for Rams fans, and they claimed it wasn't a casting call. It was just the fact that they were doing a live show and they needed fans to come in. And it happened to link to a place where actors can sign in.
Listen, every time that I go to Waffle House or buy a Waffle House, it can be 3 p.m. or 3 a.m.
Yeah.
I either see things I'm glad I no longer do as a person or things I can't believe that other people do as a person.
Yeah.
It's one of the two things.
You're right. Have you ever been to a Waffle House wedding?
No.
That's a thing.
I used the bathroom at a Waffle House during my junior prom, but I didn't eat at a Waffle House.
What do you mean? Like, you've never?
We were just driving by.
You mean like you've never eaten at Waffle House or something?
Oh, I've eaten at Waffle House too many times.
I was gonna say that's heaven sent, right?
I've never done a wedding involved Waffle House, but somehow Waffle House came into my life on prom.
I have said this on the record many times, and I may change my tastes. My culinary tastes have altered a bit as I've entered my 30s, but at a younger age, I once stated if I was given one final meal and I was going to get executed, I would say I want that meal to be at 2 a.m. at a Waffle House and just go to town. And I want it to be the craziest Waffle House ever with just drunk people being idiots all over the place.
Yeah, you need to drink at least 6 to 12 beers before you have that meal so you can get back into the zone you've got to be in.
Exactly. It was always a special place for me. So anyway, I go back to that. I actually had in high school, I had a Waffle House hat. Like, you know, the hats that they wear. They gave me one. I went to the same Waffle House a lot. There was one right by where Moeller played football games. Mm-hmm. And so we would usually go before and after a game or whatever. Not necessarily before and after, but before or after. Unless it was a big night.
I see.
And I'd get the hat, and I got it, and I would wear it, like, in the student section, like, because I was a big goof. I would wear it on my head, and that was like my signature.
It's
right,
good branding.
Was the Waffle House? Like, I was fine, dude. As a 17-year-old kid, I'm all about putting my name behind the Waffle House brand. I was totally into it. I got a story that I share with Brad Johansson, who used to work here he was Bengals play-by-play and here at Local 12 for a while. He's in Raleigh now, but I was in high school. Brad has just started doing sports here, and I actually got Brad to sign my Waffle House hat when he was covering a game.
Nice.
So that's how big time that Waffle House hat was. It had Brad Johansson's signature on it.
Yeah, I really respect this. The Waffle House hat is like pronouncing to everybody that you're here to party, but without having to go through the trouble of growing out a mullet.
Exactly.
Actually, a Waffle House hat on a mullet.
Yeah, well, that's that's the only way you're allowed to be in Waffle House without a shirt on.
I was about to say. Yeah.
Is if you have a mullet and a Waffle House hat. All right, so we'll have plenty more to continue to get to as we go through the offseason. We get into a bit of a dead period-ish.
I got plenty of more Waffle House stories, so yeah, that'll get us to at least April.
But we will be all over the staff stuff as this is churning out over the next week or so. So we'll be back for the BBP next week with that, or unless there's an emergency edition necessary.
Gosh, and there's not.
And you know what the only way that there could be an emergency.
Marvin's hired as defensive coordinator.
Marvin Lewis is hired as defensive coordinator. I promise you an emergency BBP within the hour. You can know that you've got that coming to you. Anyway, so keep an eye out for all that. We'll keep it coming to you. Today in Kanye, what do we got? anything.
You gonna spring one on me like this?
It happens at the end of every episode. I mean, there's no springing to it. I mean, just first Google search Kanye West. What has he done? Anything? Oh, by the way, I love that he wasn't totally. I thought he'd be more associated with the Fyre Festival doc, which I just watched last week. Have you seen it?
Yeah, I've seen it.
Yeah. I really thought that I wanted Kanye to like just show up in the middle of that doc and like have a very significant role.
Some sort of role.
Just a guy who Kanye was going to headline the festival and then just pull out the last second because he's like, yeah. Or like stab that Billy dude in the kidney or something.
Or a Kanye West demands bankrupted their effort in some way. Totally derailed it.
Which would have been totally possible. Did you find anything?
Now I'm just sort of seeking out headlines that are Kanye West headlines. It could be from The Onion or Kanye West Real Life. Kanye West sings Kanye West song at karaoke.
Oh, that's great.
He sang his own song.
Isn't that just him singing though?
Just him singing. They were all singing karaoke and he gets up and sings Good Life.
Best karaoke night ever. That happens. But seriously, if you had a song, would you get up and sing it, or would you still just go do a cover of like Sweet Caroline?
I think that 99% of us would enjoy the night and go sing a cover of a fun song.
Because
like
I'd like to see Kanye sing Dwight Yoakam or something. You know what I mean? Like something stupid like that.
Dude, I got to give you credit.
I just Yoakam'd you.
Yeah, because you are great with karaoke.
Yeah.
And you drop a Dwight Yoakam like this. Man, I tell you what, you just...
That's the only way this podcast can end with you for some reason flowering me with more compliments. I don't know why. I really don't know why. Is it because we had this week apart?
I'm gonna take you to Waffle House.
Are we gonna have like a long embrace at the end of this and just hug, bro hug, like the Zach Andy bro hug, much talked about. I don't know why people talk about it. So I thought it was very natural.
I didn't see anything wrong with that one.
It was no. Hello, nice to meet you. Hey,
pretty common greeting.
We're gonna be friends. I got no problem with it. People stop talking about screenshots.
I have got to give you credit.
maybe that should be the title of this episode. It's just BBP : I got to give you credit.
You don't got to take it because I'm giving
it. I'm not taking it. All right. Anyway, thanks everybody for listening to the BBP. Again, we will be back next week. We always appreciate having y'all listen. If you got any questions, make sure you fire them at us, and we'll get to as much as you can. Obviously, make sure you have your Inquirer Bengals app. You need that so we can buzz you in your pocket when any news happens. Like, yo, I don't know, Marvin Lewis named defensive coordinator since any Bengals. Anyway, thanks for listening. We'll talk to you later.